So I'm really glad to have you here, Aria Rees, on our podcast and our website. For those who might not know who you are, I always start with a very basic question. Who are you? Can you introduce yourself a little bit? And then we're going to speak about comics, obviously.
Yeah, of course. So I'm Aria Rees, or Aria Slamet Rees. I am an Australian comic artist who probably I'm best known for my online comic Witchy, which is a fantasy webcomic about a world where everyone has magic and the power of your magic is determined by the length of your hair.
So this means that I would be more powerful than you.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I have short hair for the listeners. So I also am having Cry Wolf Girl, my short book coming out this month in French. And I'm currently working on a longer form comic called Strange Bedfellows with HarperCollins, but also being released by Kenai next year. So look forward to that. But basically, I am a comic artist who I've been working, making web comics and then finally sort of working with a mainstream American publisher in the past 2 or 3 years. And I like to focus, most of my work is more fantasy or science fiction oriented, and I like to sort of focus on marginalized characters. Yeah.
And I wanted to just, since you've been living since you were born in Australia.
So I lived in Australia. I was born in Australia, lived there. I actually studied in Denmark for 3.5 years from 2014, so lived in Europe for three and a half years. Other than that, been in Australia.
Because my question was, because I don't know many writers or artists from Australia, and I'm really curious about how is the comic book market there. Did you had any issues reading or having access to comic books when you were younger? How is it?
Yeah, it's pretty dead. It's a really small population. It's very isolated. So I had very few physical comics growing up. I had, Garfield, Calvin and Hobbes. I could access those at the library, or my parents would have a few issues. There used to be a Borders in Australia, which is, I think, an American chain, and they used to have like a manga section, and that was like the only place when I was growing up that you could get any kind of manga or a broader array of like American comics. That was the only place you could get it. And so I maybe went there like once or twice a year. So it was very, kind of hard to find comics, but that led to me looking online. And so I found a lot of webcomics. So I probably started reading webcomics around, I was pretty young, I was like maybe 8 or 9. So probably around 2004 to age myself. That was sort of my one sort of connection. Obviously, I really sort of found myself being fascinated by comics. And so it was sort of, natural that I just, read and read and read like any webcomic I could get my hand on. So it was sort of natural that I then went to make one of my own. Yeah.
But would you say that also it was maybe that it was easier to access them because of the lack of a physical market, or maybe also basically it's free, online webcomics are free, so maybe exactly. Also you could read a lot without any money issues.
Exactly. My parents were very we'd go to the Borders, the one place that had comics, and my parents would tell me like, you can have one. They were they wanted me to read prose books, like with words,
real literature.
Exactly.
We are the same kind of people here in France.
Yeah, yeah. So I was sort of like, this is what I can get my hands on. And of course, because it's free, I can read as much as I want. So yeah, that was helpful.
And at what point did you decide that you wanted to do comics and not just read them?
Well, I think I was always from that young age, I was drawing already. I always had a pen and a sketchbook with me wherever I went. So I was always just a matter of finding what I wanted to do with that. So I studied animation originally but in
Denmark?
I did 1 year in Australia at a university there. There was an animation course that I was studying. What was the question?
If you went to Denmark to study animation.
So I started doing animation, but during that time I had, actually earlier I had a few like sort of attempts at comics. Like I started a webcomic when I was 16 and I lasted like 5 pages and then I was like, that's way too much work. And then again, I made like a short comic for a school project. And so I was, you know, I was sort of interested in it. I had like a half year between when I did my first year of university and when I decided I wanted to study in Denmark. And that was when I'd had this idea for Witchy sort of rolling around in my head. And I decided to just like, oh, well, I have all this free time. I'm just going to, you know, start that. It was just sort of, that was sort of my side thing because I thought that animation would be my main job because at the time there was like a lot of really exciting shows coming out of America and I was like, oh, this is cool. Like maybe I want to be a storyboard artist in America, dreaming big. But I worked on Witchy the entire time I was studying animation and I think I had this realization towards the end of my studies where I had like a couple of publishers come to me and be like, hey, we're interested in publishing Witchy physically. And I was like, oh. And I also at the time I was really burnt out from studying animation because, you know, we'd done our student film and that was really intense. And then I went straight into an internship, which was great, but also really intense. And I was just like exhausted. So I was like, I really enjoy making comics and maybe I'll try doing it full time and just see where it goes. You know, I have publishers interested in me. So yeah, maybe I'll just give it a go and hope for the best. And when I was putting together the pitch for Strange Bedfellows, I was like, this is sort of, if this gets picked up, then I know I've made it. But if it doesn't, I'm going to look for another job because I was like, it's not going to make me the money. But fortunately, it got picked up. And yeah, I'm doing comics full time now.
But still, because you were like switching from animation to comics because you were burnt out from animation. But doing comics is also really tiring.
Yeah.
Did not choose something that would be easy or in which you could rest a little bit.
No, I'm stupid. No, I think it was, at least with comics at the time, I knew I'd be able to like live at my parents' house for a little while and take it at my own pace, at least to start with. So there was that, yeah, there was that idea that it was, you know, I've got a bit of time, like I can take it slow and yeah, take my time. But now I am working full time in comics and I'm like, oh, I'm tired again. Why did I do this?
So can you tell us a little bit about the origin story of Witchy, how it came to be? And so what were the first steps when you decided to go online for this project?
Yeah, so I think I started coming up with ideas for it probably, I was still in high school, probably in my final year or my second final year, it really started with the character design of the main character. For those who haven't seen the book, she has a very, she's sort of a dark-skinned girl with like a very prominent nose and blonde hair and blue eyes. So she's quite a striking character. And I was just, that was sort of the design that I started with. But I had been, I had an idea for a shorter comic that was a similar setting where the magic and the hair were associated, but it was about hair color. But that sort of, you know, is a bit more less easy to explain. Like it's, yeah. And I had a, I had told a friend about the idea, and we had come back and talked about it again, like a few months later. And she said, oh, you know, didn't you have that story about, you know, where hair length equals magic? And I was like, oh, no, it was actually going to be hair color, but hair length makes way more sense. And so it was sort of, you know, lucky that she misremembered. So, yeah, and then from there, I, like with that concept, I started, the more I thought about it and what that would mean for a world that is built around magic, it became more and more interesting to me because, you know, who is born with like their hair grows less quickly, so they have shorter hair. The other sort of premise in which he is that if your hair is too long, you are determined to be a danger to the military state and you are annihilated for having hair that's too long. So there's sort of this balance between, you know, living with short hair, living with hair that's too long. And our main character, Nineveh, when she's very young, her father is killed for having hair that's too long. And then as she grows older, she realizes that her hair is growing very quickly. So that's sort of the setup for the story. But yeah, it was just really having that seed for the story and then thinking about how much that said about the world and what I could do with that story. Yeah.
So I haven't read it yet because it's not out in France yet, but it's still available online. But from what I understand, you've been doing Witchy for almost 10 years now. So the series is in hiatus right now,
yes.
But it's not finished yet. So how do you write a story? Because you started from the concept with the hair and the magic, and you got your characters. But where do you go from that? Are you like planning months and months and months before the stories, or is it still like an ongoing process?
Yeah. So when I started, it was very much just like writing a chapter at a time, just like little by little. When I did start, I did have sort of an end to the story in mind. So that was some writing advice I got at a young age that I always tried to keep in mind, because even if you don't know what's happening in the middle, I find that having an end goal helps just so you know you will finish the story at some point. But it was very much just like chapter by chapter writing as I went. Eventually I reached a point where this is when one of the publishers reached out to me and said, hey, I'd love to see a full outline for the story. And I was like, oh, I don't have a full outline for the story. But I did have, you know, I was writing chapter by chapter, but I had ideas, you know, that I would come up with and then I'd write them down. So I had sort of loose, you know, plot points that I then put together into a cohesive outline when the publisher asked for it. So now it is all planned out and I have like, you know, chapter by chapter arc all like set out, and it's just a matter of getting it done. But yeah, it's Witchy's been on hiatus because I'm obviously working on this bigger graphic novel project at the moment and it's taking all my time. But yeah, hopefully, I'm hoping that this year the online comic will be back, yeah, because I'll have a bit more time because I finished my book next month. So,
and did you feel like you were getting more attention and more pressure also on Witchy as it was published, because you also had to like put a page like I haven't followed when it was done, but what was it like, a page a week or a
yeah
chapter a week?
Yeah, it used to be a page a week, sometimes two pages a week depending on how free I was. But yeah, it I think for the first 5 years, I didn't miss an update. I think from the beginning, I was already very harsh on myself about getting it out on time, getting out at least a page a week. What? Sorry, I lost track of the
rhythm of publication.
So once the book came out, I think once the book came out, I sort of, I was still obviously I wanted to keep going and keep coming out on time, but I think I got by the time the second book was coming out, that's when I got this pitch accepted for this next book. So it was kind of I knew from that point when I had that pitch chosen, because it was a story idea I'd had for a really long time. And I was like, I really want to do this justice. I want to make a good book. I knew I was going to have to put Witchy on hiatus. So I almost didn't have time, like when the books were coming out, to think about,
You were just in the process, in the creative process. Because it was nominated and got an awards. Ignatz Awards. So I get that maybe was big for you. Because I had another question that like you went online directly, but it might be a naive question, but you didn't want to try directly to be published on paper by either Australian or American publishers?
Yeah, I think my goal from the beginning of starting it was doing it as a webcomic was my way of finding an audience. And I thought if I find an audience, then I will have interest in a publisher. Because at the time when I started it, I didn't know anything about the publishing industry. I didn't know how I would go about getting a book published. And at the time, the Australian publishing industry wasn't interested in comics at all. Like there was no mainstream publisher, not even necessarily a small publisher that would be doing comics at all. So now it's a bit different because America is selling, especially middle grade young adult comics at huge numbers. So now the Australian industry is interested and they're like, oh, like we can make money this way. Back in 2014, it was like, you couldn't read Australian comics. Like, they might be Australian artists on American comics, but it was just something I didn't see at all. So, I was like that putting it online was like the only way I could think of getting it out there, because I didn't really know about the other avenues. And it wasn't until I sort of connected with other people in comics and in publishing that I sort of understood the path to that. But yeah.
Do you think a little bit about the audience that you've got? Is it like, are you aiming for some kind of specific demographics or not at all?
Not really, no. I think I'm really... Like I've thought a little bit more about audience with my current book because it's a mainstream publisher, and they want you to come to them with an audience in mind. But even given that, it's more of like maybe censoring some stuff. Like maybe I would make it, if it were a webcomic, it would be like there'd be more swear words or something like that, But no, I very much always just wanted to make things that like a younger me would have wanted to read. Although now looking to like what I make in the future, depending on, what kind of publisher I'm working with, it's very much just what do I want to read, I think I'm very much influenced by more like by my manga, for instance, which is... I was a really big fan of shonen manga when I was younger. So I always enjoyed like the violence and the swear words, but with young, like some things that younger people could read, so that's very much an influence. But as I get older, I think it's just, I want to make things that are fun, but also I think at like the heart of my interest is I just want to make a good story, you know, that resonates with people and that is sincere and comes from, you know, an important place from, you know, it's something that I want, it's a message, or it's, I want to say something about myself and, or about the world. And, you know, I just want to be,
a storyteller.
Yeah. A storyteller. Exactly. Yeah.
But you mentioned just at the beginning of this interview that, you had a focus on the marginalized characters and also, could you explain why?
Yeah. I think, for my background, my mother is Indonesian. I'm queer. I'm non-binary. I come from a marginalized background myself. And I think, you know, when I was growing up in Australia, it's much better now, but there were like no Asians on TV, or barely any Asians on TV. And so like, I didn't see many people that looked like me, and it was very alienating. And so that was sort of the beginning of my interest in writing and drawing marginalized characters, is just like, you know, having people be able to see themselves. But I think also there's a bit of a problem with a lot of, and this is much more in like American media, is like a lot of the stories you see about these kinds of characters is it's about either like our struggles, or it's, you know, trying to teach a lesson. But I really just want to, it really comes from a place of me like, man, I wish like Naruto could be about an Asian girl, you know, like it's from a much more simple place of like, I want us to have like really fun stories, and that where like the identity is still a part of a core part of the character, but it's not like necessarily
the only thing you should focus on.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not, the whole story doesn't hinge on it. Yeah.
I had a discussion with Wendy Shu last year, and she told me that for example, for Asian kids or black kids, that they don't have to read a book about a young colored kid having struggled with racism, because he's already been living that.
Exactly.
So, and I guess that maybe that's what you're aiming for. Like, you can have identities, different identities, but you don't have the books or the stories to be about their identities.
Yes, exactly.
It's just a feature of the characters.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, I want to still have like the culture included and the experience included, but yeah, not central to the story. Yeah, absolutely.
And can you tell us a little bit also about your first book in France?
Yes.
Once you it won just 1 month prior to Witchy, but Cry Wolf Girl is out at Kinai. Can you tell us a little bit, because it's really different in terms of length from Witchy.
Yes.
So this is about Daiwa, a little girl who thinks that wolves are going to attack her village, and so you are like inspired by the famous tale about the boy who cried wolf.
Yes. Yeah. So it's based on, well, it's, yeah, inspired by the boy who cried wolf. I did it originally with Shortbox, which is a UK publisher. That was the original English edition. So I had sort of a page limit already coming to it. That's why it's shorter. But I, at the time that I was writing it, I'd been recovering from a panic disorder. So I had previously, like the whole previous year, I'd been having panic attacks all the time. And it's funny, the media landscape around panic attacks has changed a lot, because now they're showing panic attacks in like the Puss in Boots movie. So it's, you know, it's a bit different. But at the time, I hadn't really seen anything that illustrated what living through that felt like, and how real the paranoia and the fear feels in that moment. And it just sort of like, I was just going on a walk and I just remembered the story of the boy who cried wolf suddenly, just sort of came into my head. And I just had that moment of thought of, what if he thought that the wolves were real? What if he's not, crying wolf because he's trying to trick the villagers? What if, it's a genuine fear that he feels? And that was sort of the basis for the story. And then it came together really quickly, really, after I had that thought. It was, it's a short book. It's a simple story. So it just sort of, just wanted to show the different sort of angles of that. Mm. Yeah.
But is it easier to write and draw a short story compared to one when you have the length of putting everything that you want? Because it's a much constrained space and you still have to fit all your ideas in a certain amount of pages.
Yeah, not for me at all. I really struggle to make short stories. I always find it really hard to think of a story under 100 pages. So this was definitely a challenge for me, but I was kind of lucky. I had been thinking of pitching another story to Shortbox at the time, but it felt like the story was just too long and it was growing. And then this came to me and I was like, oh, I actually think I can make the story in under 50 pages. So it was kind of lucky. I think it's the kind of thing where you're a bit under pressure and so your brain is just like working, in the background, trying to figure something out. So fortunately, this did actually, I thought of the story and as I, outlined it and plotted it out, I was like, yes, like it didn't keep growing like, a lot of stories do, but this book is like the only story that I've had that's short since I thought of it.
I think you really got into a change of style for this book, maybe more like a manga or so, but also that the whole book is really stylized, like there's a style really harsh, maybe. I guess that was also a part of the process of making this story.
Yeah. So it was really the idea, I think, came from studying animation, actually, and we were always talking about developing a style that suits, the themes of the story that you're trying to tell. So that was really in the front of my head of like, I wanted to make, and I think for a lot of the books I make, even the book I'm making at the moment, it's much closer to Witchy than Cry Wolf Girl, but still there are stylistic aspects of it that are different because I'm always interested in, shaping the style according to the story I'm trying to tell. So yeah, obviously this one, it's a limited palette that's quite intense. And it's very rough. And I've had a few people ask me over the last few days doing signings if it was traditional because I did really want that sort of rough textured look to it. It really was just, I like to develop a style that really heightens, what the book is trying to say. So, yeah.
So it wasn't traditional, it was still digital.
It was digital, yes.
Because you've got a slow range palette of colors. Mm-hmm. And I guess the choice of the red is because it's really a color for strong emotions. Mm-hmm. And especially panic.
Yes. Yeah. And the yellow as well just sort of pops in a nice way against the red for the, I think the wolf's eyes are a yellow a lot of the time.
And it's also you for example on this page, and we see a lot when also when the wolves are there, that's really your character Daiwa is really like there's everything around her. She really wants to, she really feels I don't have the word because I don't have all the words in English, so that's bad, but it really feels like overwhelming. Yeah. Like even the trees, they're very big, and she's really small in the center of the page. And I guess that you wanted also to to show this kind of emotions by with your drawings, but is it something easy to do?
Yeah, is it easy? Nothing about making comics is easy. but yeah, I think it was just because the emotions that the character was feeling were so familiar to me, that did really inform the way that I was able to compose things. Like it felt very natural to come up with those compositions, because it just, I'm a very feelings based artist. So yeah. Sometimes it's hard to explain my process in a really step-by-step way, because sometimes it's just
your guts speaking.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, this was a very gut forward story of just, you know, drawing the layouts and the thumbnails and saying this feels right, you know.
Or maybe you had someone else reading your pages to just see if the feeling that you wanted to be expressed well done.
I did have an editor on this, but it was,
I was more thinking like maybe some friends or,
oh no, this was pretty much just me
and your editor.
Yeah.
Okay. I've read an interview in which the interviewer was talking about African culture to describe the village, and apparently a lot of people are mistaking it.
Not a lot of people, but it's something.
Some people are mistaken it because it's from Indonesia culture.
Yes, it's kind of similar to witchy, which is like a melting pot of different Asian oceanic cultures. This is sort of a melting pot of various indigenous Indonesian cultures. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's like any one, you know, it's not like, so the main culture in Indonesia is Javanese. That's like the big culture. And then you have smaller ethnic groups. So it was the smaller ethnic groups that I was interested in taking sort of different costumes and design elements from, just because it's not something that you see a lot of. And it was just, thought it would be interesting to take some of those design pieces and put them into the story. It's a very, like, it is still sort of a fantasy setting, because there are no wolves in Indonesia and there are no like big pine forests in Indonesia. So, you know, it's still a made up place, but, yeah, it was just interesting to me to do a little bit of, I always like doing a bit of research and finding influences from maybe unusual routes. Yeah.
So you keep the balance between what's from real world culture, mm-hmm. and what you're just making up.
Yes.
You have to have a balance between these elements.
Yeah. I think the reason that I make more like fantastical worlds is because I don't really have the time and maybe even the knowledge to do like something actually based, especially when it comes to these, you know, cultures that I'm, you know, I have, you know, roots in, but I'm not, you know, I've never lived in Indonesia. Like there's sort of a distance between me and the culture. I wouldn't feel comfortable saying that it's set in the real world in one of these cultures, because I have to make things up where there are gaps in the research, you know? So, I do what I can, but I always try to, you know, make sure that people know there's a bit of fantasy to it, because I fill in the gaps with, you know, what's in my head.
and I've got two more questions, but the fact that you are privileging like a fantasy science fiction compared to like a real a slice of life or stuff like that is also because maybe what do you think about the power of fantasies as for like what we can tell of the world and with this kind of imagery?
Yeah, absolutely. That's sort of a big thing that I like to play with fantasy. It is one of the reasons I'm drawn to fantasy and science fiction is the fact that you can tell stories that don't feel like they are you can explore big themes without it feeling like you're trying to teach someone a lesson, which I think it can be the case. And maybe it's just the limits of my own ability, but I think sometimes it's hard to say things in real world settings that are easier to say with fantasy. So like Witchy, it's a big story about power and, you know, privilege, and there's lots of parallels between the society that we live in and that world. And I think if I were just trying to say that straight up in a real world setting, it would feel very preachy and very...
people would just say boo.
Yeah.
Just run an essay. Yeah.
Exactly. But I think you can kind of sneak things in with fantasy in a way that you can't with real world settings. But
even though Cry Wolf Girl has a very empathetic message in the end, that and so maybe also you think that these kind of books can also help other people that have gone through what Dawa is going through and what you did went through.
Yeah, absolutely. The nice thing about this book, I think the interesting thing about this book is obviously for me it was about a very personal thing that I experienced, but I've had people come to me saying like, oh, this is how like my experience with schizophrenia is. This is how my experience surviving sexual abuse is. Like a lot of people have come with their own interpretations that I think they wouldn't have if it were a less allegorical story, you know, if it were, you know, less metaphorical. So that too is sort of part of the reason why I like to work in fantasy and science fiction, is that there is also wiggle room for people to come with their own interpretations and find their own meaning, which I find really powerful. Yeah.
Okay. What can you tell us about Strange Bedfellows?
Okay. So it is... So
you've got to tease us a little bit because it's going to be out next year, we still have to wait for it.
Yeah. So it is a young adult sci-fi romance set... in the future, maybe a couple hundred years, it's a little bit vague, and it's set on a colony, a colony of Earth thousands and thousands of light years away. And it's about a young man who has dropped out of college, sort of burnt out, and he, after a very embarrassing public meltdown, and so he's trying to pull himself up out of this rut when he suddenly develops the ability to manifest his dreams into the real world. And this includes his high school crush, who he can't stop dreaming about, and who has also sort of disappeared from the like sort of no one knows where he is. He's not on social media. And so there's a bit of mystery there. And it's about he and this dream manifestation of his high school crush trying to get him back on his feet after this meltdown and everything that ensues from there.
But the real crush is going to manifest at some point, I guess. Maybe
have to
so.
Read.
Yeah, I have to read. All right, but we'll be waiting for this next year at HarperCollins. Thank you very much, Ariel, for being here and for your time.
Yes.
Thank you.